We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It is Tuesday, July 23rd, and Americans, in a bipartisan fashion, actually, have a lot of questions. And those questions are no closer to being answered on where is Joe Biden? No one has really seen or probably not heard from him, even though apparently he called in to a Harris event yesterday for a number of days. And there are no closer to answers on the attempted assassination of former President Trump, with the Secret Service Director Kimberly Cheadle testifying yesterday before Congress. A lot of great questions and really zero answers came out yesterday. It was, frankly, really embarrassing, but it was good to see a bipartisan coalition of that committee actually call for her resignation to her face. And one of the great lines of questioning came from Congressman Michael Cloud, and he said this: whether it is the FBI or Dr. Fauci, time after time, multiple layers of accountability turn into plausible deniability. So no one is actually held responsible for their failures in D.C. So Congressman Cloud from the great state of Texas joins me this morning. Good morning, Representative. And well said. Did you get any information at all that you feel was useful out of yesterday's hearing?
Well, I think the biggest piece of information that we all got is that Kim Cheadle is incompetent at her job. And that it's sad to see, like you said, question after question after question. I was kind of embarrassed for her. I have no animosity toward her, but she's definitely in a job that is above her skill set and or her willingness to perform the job. I'm not sure which it is, but it was astonishing. Even on the very basic questions, the one question that's on everybody's mind is why wasn't the roof covered? And to have nothing to say toward that after 9 days showed just an extreme lack of curiosity even for what had happened, just as an observer, much less the director of the Secret Service.
Yeah, and I watched a lot of the hearing yesterday, and what was surprising to me is that she just seemed so unapologetic for really having no responses to all of these questions. I mean, the purpose of this hearing was fact-finding and to actually ask and answer to the public what exactly happened on these types of security failures. And for 9 days of after an attempted assassination of a former president, I mean, I was expecting her to come in at least with some kind of defense or explanation or something. And it just seemed like she kept pushing it to, well, you're going to have to ask the FBI that, or I'm not going to give anybody's names, or I don't really know. And I mean, isn't that her job to know?
Yeah, you would think so. And to think in the biggest failure we've had in decades, under her watch, hasn't been to the site yet. Seems to be sitting around waiting for the report to kind of fizzle up through the bureaucracy. You know, in a situation like this, first of all, we'd expect to see a resignation with such a catastrophic failure. But even then, the interest and intent and intrigue to go to the place and ask the hard questions I think for the vast majority of Americans, you're thinking, if I'm in that position, I'm embarrassed that this happened on my watch, and I'm upset, and I'm pressing my people for the questions on how in the world could this happen, and getting those very, very we understand the investigation is going to go on for a little while, the 60-day limit for a report sheet is probably a little too far, but to not have every answer after 9 days is understandable. To not have any answers after 9 days is unforgivable.
Yeah, and even Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez even said that 60 days is too far out. And I was surprised to see that there were a number of Democrats on that committee that actually joined in, of course, specifically asking for resignation, saying this is unacceptable. Of course, you know, they made a little bit of political theater out of, totally unrelated political issues. But, you know, that's the Democrats.
That's expected. Yeah.
Right. And so your fellow Congresswoman Nancy Mace has now filed this resolution for impeachment. Is that something that you support and you think would actually get passed, since that's the only other way to remove her unless the president fires her, is my understanding?
Sure. Well, there's an impeachment, and then we could defund her position. There's a couple different bills that are out right now to deal with this. I do hope that the speaker takes this up while we're in D.C. this week, and because I do think there's bipartisan support for this. I mean, you saw the astonishment across the aisle on just basic incompetency. You know, she came to the hearing without even a timeline of the events. Now, we all had a timeline of the events, and I was hoping that we would sit there and say, okay, this is the timeline as we understand it right now that, you know, our staffs have produced. But hopefully she'll fill in some of the missing details here. That's what I was expecting out of the hearing. Instead, we find out, well, you know, I don't even have a timeline with me, and the one that I do have doesn't have specifics. I mean, it was just astonishing. It was astonishing, the level of lack of preparedness, a lack of interest, it almost seemed. It's troubling. She needs to be removed.
Yeah, and I think probably the vast majority of Americans, regardless of political persuasion, agree with that and were very troubled by her lack of preparedness and just seeming disaffectedness. I mean, she just seemed like she really didn't care. And I'm speaking with Congressman. Yeah, I'm speaking with Congressman Michael Cloud, and it was interesting as well that the only question that she seemed to directly answer and absolutely for certain know the answer to was that there wasn't coordination with anyone else. This was a lone sniper, and she seemed to want to dispel any quote-unquote conspiracy theories. What did you make of that she was so intent on answering that but nothing else?
I don't know how she could know that after 9 days and not know why the roof was outside of the perimeter. You know, those are the details that we would expect not to know yet, because it would require investigation. It would require breaking in, you know, figuring out the encrypted communications he was working with and all these other things. And what's extremely sad and frustrating about this is about the more we allegedly know about this, the more questions we have about what's going on and things not passing the sniff test, so to speak. And this is really what's troubling for the American people. And, you know, aside from the bureaucratic incompetence that you mentioned of the plausible deniability of her not knowing who signs off on security plans, even, you know, it's troubling. It's very troubling.
It really is. And one of the questions that I've had through this whole thing as well is, do we know yet if we've seen these types of security failures at other outdoor Trump rallies, or was it somehow just Butler, Pennsylvania, where there happened to be a sniper and an attempted assassination? Or theoretically, could this have happened had there been someone there with nefarious intent toward President Trump? I mean, do we know the level of failures across the board, or was it limited to just this event?
Well, exactly. This is why we're pressing on these questions and why 60 days isn't good enough. I mean, it's not like we can wait 60 days. You know, President Trump is going to be traveling around the country. He's going to be holding events. We're in a campaign season where both candidates are going to be all candidates, I should say, are going to be running around speaking to people. And the idea that, you know, we're going to not know the answers to these questions for a couple months, you know, we've got to be getting answers to these and making adjustments immediately.
Yeah, it seems like a post-election is not really a great time for these answers. And so right. We all really appreciate that you are pressing these questions, and we'll look forward to hopefully the speaker bringing some of these resolutions to the floor. I know that you have a hard out time this morning, Congressman Michael Cloud, and I really appreciate you taking the time to join us this morning. So thank you so much, and keep up the great work. And for everyone wanting to follow Congressman Michael Cloud, he is at Rep Cloud TX for Texas on X, and really appreciate his time. And the pinned tweet up there, or pinned post, whatever we're allowed to call them these days, is that clip and his commentary and questioning to the director. So really appreciate his time this morning. And as I was saying, I was watching this testimony yesterday, and it was completely shocking to me. And if you didn't get to see it, I would encourage you, go and just watch a couple of these clips. You don't have to sit through the like 4 or 5 hour, however long it ultimately was. But just to get a taste of this, not only the incompetency, but the absolute what's the word, callous, kind of indifferent, I think is the word I'm looking for. The indifference of the Secret Service director who sat there being questioned by both sides of the aisle. And it was fascinating to me to see that there were representatives who are Democrats who, for almost nothing else, I cannot think of another committee that I have seen that has been so bipartisan, and they've all come together to specifically just berate and condemn it with astonishment, just her lack of caring, of sitting there as the Secret Service director who had a failure that has not happened since President Ronald Reagan. I mean, this is the first time in 42 years that there has been an attempted assassination that we're aware of, right? I mean, there could have been other threats and other things that were handled properly and appropriately that the Secret Service handled so that we don't get to a national crisis like this. And so here we are, the last, now it's been about 10 days, and to see what has happened in the last 10 days, this is a whirlwind of a news cycle. It is a whirlwind of a lot of questions, and we aren't getting a lot of answers. And so Hot Air reported this morning on the director of the Secret Service. In this case, Republicans and Democrats are united. Secret Service Director Kimberly Cheadle is absolutely horrible, both as a director and as a witness before Congress, and is totally embarrassing and unacceptable. As far as I can tell, and this is, from Hot Air, the writer, 100% of the congressmen think Cheadle must go, not just because the buck stops with her, but because she is stonewalling. And I agree with that. There were a couple of the Democrats that were trying to pacify her a little bit, saying, oh, well, thank you for coming. I know this has been hard for you. Like, oh, poor little Secret Service director that didn't do your job, and now here you're having to testify in front of Congress. I don't feel bad for her, quite frankly. I think she should have gone in there with a lot more preparedness, a lot more answers. And even though, yes, 9 days may not be enough for an entire investigation, I posted this yesterday during the testimony on my social media. I've never been in law enforcement, but I guarantee you, just by virtue of being an interested human being and having a basic skill set of being able to question what's going on, I would have had more answers for that committee if I had had access to the same type of information as the U.S. Secret Service director for the last 9 days. And as Congressman Cloud mentioned, she hasn't even gone to Butler, Pennsylvania to visit the site. I mean, it's utterly embarrassing. It shows a dereliction of duty. It shows a lack of even basic interest in getting answers for the American people. And I'm left wondering whether or not some other event may happen in the future to whether it's President Trump or some other protected asset from the U.S. Secret Service. Another member of Congress mentioned that there have been several other reported failures under Director Kimberly Cheadle's watch, and that she still has not resigned. And hopefully that's forthcoming. A lot of people are speculating she won't last through the week, just given the public and congressional pressure. Lauren Boebert from Colorado was saying that she's going to call every day to follow up on all of that. There are a number of bills, as Congressman Cloud mentioned. So if you are interested in this, of course, we can make our voices heard to the members of Congress, to the Speaker's office. And you could call and voice your support or your opinion on that situation, because I think that the American public deserves answers, regardless of whether anyone is a Trump supporter or not. This type of event should never happen to a protected asset from the Secret Service. So we're going to talk more about this when we come right back from the break here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. A recent study reports that the rapidly declining global birth rate will lead to a major population crisis if birth rates continue to decline. Their massive support for Planned Parenthood is all part of their plan. While we may feel hopeless in the constant attack on life, there is an amazing way to fight back. When they shout abortion, we shout life. Preborn is leading the way. Every day, their network rescues 200 babies. When a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears the heartbeat, a baby's chance at life doubles. The ultrasound is the secret weapon that joins a mother's heart to her child. Preborn provides ultrasounds for clinics in the highest abortion areas. Can we join hands nationwide for life? One ultrasound is just $28, but any gift will help. $5,000 will underwrite ultrasounds for an entire network for a day. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
You know what else is dangerous? I believe your horrifying ineptitude and your lack of skilled leadership is a disgrace. Your obfuscating today is shameful. And you should be fired immediately and go back to Garden Doritos. Mr. Chairman, I yield back.
And that was, of course, Representative Pat Fallon telling Director Cheadle to go back to guarding Doritos, which was one of the best lines from yesterday's testimony on Capitol Hill from this just ridiculously incompetent director. And so the bipartisan effort that is calling for Secret Service Director Cheadle to resign or be fired is gaining momentum, especially after yesterday. But what do we actually know, if anything, now after about 10 days from the Butler, Pennsylvania rally? So joining me to talk about all of this and more is Scott Uhlinger, who is a retired CIA station chief. And good morning, Scott. So what did you make of the testimony yesterday?
Well, I mean, I think the testimony was absolutely shocking in the sense that her contempt and basically refusal to answer basic questions just shows you how entitled these deep state creatures are. And certainly the representatives, excoriating her is welcome. But she really didn't answer the questions. And even the fact that a lot of Democrats are now on board with removing her. Perhaps removal is not the right way to do things, because removal might prevent a lot of a deeper investigation. And that's what I think that's what's appropriate here.
Interesting. So if she is removed, then what would prevent a deeper investigation in that instance?
Well, I think there really wouldn't be anything to prevent it. But I think the hope amongst the Democrats might be that if she were to resign, then maybe the heat would be off and then the news cycle would move forward and then people would kind of forget about it. I think the last thing they want is a detailed investigation. And it's obviously appropriate. I mean, not only the things that you just talked about a few minutes ago, but the recent revelations that that there were people stationed on the roof and they left because it was simply too hot for them. And the fact that the gunman had a rifle that apparently was hidden somewhere along the way to the site where he was shooting from. These are basic building blocks that the Secret Service is supposed to be good at. And the fact that they were so egregious with it, begs further investigation.
Absolutely. And I agree with the congressman and even AOC, which is shocking. I know, I never thought I would say I agree with AOC on anything. But that 60 days out is far too long to actually get a report, and whether or not that would even be detailed or whether that would only go to members of Congress, you know, under some kind of seal, or to say that, you know, this is classified and then the American public doesn't know. I think all of this, it needs transparency. So how is this different in this instance from the attempted assassination of Ronald Reagan, you know, 42 years ago, in terms of just public transparency? I mean, obviously the director then resigned, which that was brought up very well yesterday. But how is the Secret Service as an entity and an organization and institution responding differently here than in the past?
Well, I mean, it's just that in the last 40 years, you know, the basically bureaucracy has gotten more arrogant, and they no longer are serving at the, you know, the behest of the American people. They belong there, and they're going to fight. They're going to circle the wagons, refuse to resign, and fight back again against anyone, even congressmen, that are questioning, you know, what their actual functions are. And I think it is appropriate. A way to cut through some of this would be for Congress to find her in contempt and actually jail her. Because I think you have to take some radical actions. We cannot continue this business as usual. And the business as usual is these people are flagrant lawbreakers or regulation breakers. It's sheer incompetence. And then the Republicans, you know, bring them in front of Congress and they start yelling at them and you get your little sound bite. But in the end, they're unpunished. And so the message is that, look, you can do this stuff and nothing happens to you. And it's astonishing and disappointing to me at the same time, as someone who served a career in the CIA and also a career in the Navy, to see this absolute lack of accountability. Is like it's just apocalyptic that the United States has degenerated to this level.
Yeah, so well said. And I'm speaking with Scott Uhlinger, who is a retired CIA station chief, and to see the director just sitting there saying, yeah, I'm taking accountability. Well, I've said that I'm accountable. It's like, well, how exactly? How are you taking accountability? Because usually that means you tender your resignation or actually something happens. You don't just sit through a hearing, basically non-responsive, and then say, whew, okay, I got through that. And then the Congress members got their moment on TV, their viral clip, and then life goes on, like you said. And I think some people may be a little bit shocked, perhaps, to hear something like, you know, hold her in contempt, jail her, that kind of thing. But I think you're right that if the shoe was on the other foot, Democrats are always willing to exercise the type of political will to get the outcome that they are striving for. And Republicans don't exercise that same political will. And so do you think that because of the bipartisan nature of the hearing yesterday, maybe some of the Democrats will put that political will into practice here and actually move forward with something as drastic, perhaps, as contempt or some of these other bills calling for defunding or impeachment or, you know, something that is a little bit more than what we've seen from Republicans in the past?
Right. I mean, we're certainly right. We need to move to defund, because that's the other thing that, you know, remember that we have the evil party and the stupid party, and the stupid party, the Republicans, do things like, you know, they'll have these congressional hearings and then they wind up giving that organization all the money they ask for. Well, obviously, that has got to stop. They should be denied funding as another way to leverage them. But at the same time, you know, as a CIA officer, I'm a little bit suspicious that so many of the Democrats have jumped on the bandwagon about this in support of the Republicans. Now, it's possible that, you know, these people are outraged by what they saw, but at the same time, they may be going with some kind of a script. Like, in other words, perhaps they're hoping that if you have bipartisan pressure to resign, then if she does in fact resign, then it will sort of short circuit an extended investigation. So even though AOC did bring up, surprisingly, right, we're both shocked to say that she brought up some good points, this may be a means to an end. And so I think that's just something that Republicans should keep in mind. There's also some other very troubling things about this that bear further investigation. And since we all know that, being labeled a conspiracy theorist means that you're about a month ahead of the news cycle. Things about this young man who had a very limited social circle, very limited internet activity. And we also have an FBI that is famous for provoking and basically setting up people for terrorist plots. This has been going on at least 20 years in the FBI. That needs to be investigated. There have been some revelations on Twitter, on X, about connections between the young man, the 20-year-old, and possible activity in Washington. It's just a little that needs to be further investigated. And plus, there's another thing that's sort of similar to the World Trade Center, where there were people who were shorting airline stocks the day before 9/11. There apparently were some very unusual stock plays dealing with Donald Trump's company. I guess it may be the stock symbol, maybe DJT. There was something like $900 million of short calls that were put in on Friday before the assassination attempt in a very unusual stock move, almost as if somebody had advanced knowledge of what was going to happen.
And all of these things are pieces of the puzzle that, while you could say, okay, there's a lot of coincidence that may not equal correlation and, some of these other things, it becomes a little bit too much to not at least ask the questions. And I think that's what the American people want. And it's not to say that we're buying into every quote unquote conspiracy theory, but what sets apart a conspiracy theory versus just genuinely asking questions and saying all of these things seem to be a little bit suspicious. And so, Scott Uhlinger, for the information at least that we're aware of in the public now, like those things, like, the shorting of stock, or even like some of the videos from members of Congress who and others, which I find interesting, that have actually visited Butler, Pennsylvania, and we're seeing that supposedly where the Secret Service was stationed inside that building, they would have seen the full roof where the sniper was, and that just doesn't
right.
make sense. I mean, all of these things, and to say, okay, this shot that was pretty close range wasn't within the perimeter of the Secret Service. I mean, so much of this does not make sense. What is your at least working theory right now in terms of, was this just total catastrophic failure, gross negligence, or do you think that there's a little bit more behind this at this point?
I think there's a little bit more behind it at this point. Of course, it's gross negligence and incompetence, but I think that the best case scenario for this is, in typical passive aggressive fashion, the Biden administration, through the Secret Service, deliberately gave Trump the dregs of the Secret Service, deliberately starved his protective detail of the people they needed to effectively do their job, because at the same time, the mainstream media, at their behest, is pushing the Trump is Hitler scenario, and they basically set it up to give him, a really bad quality protection at the same time as encouraging someone to take a shot at him. So I think that is the best case scenario of what happened. The worst case scenario would be something even more sinister, I think, that there was some kind of active collusion between some government actors to encourage this assassin. And again, you have to look at where this is coming from. I was a CIA station chief. I was a CIA officer overseas recruiting foreigners and observing foreign political events for my entire career. I lived abroad in the former Soviet Union for 12 years, and I'm a Russian speaker. So I don't say these things lightly, but a good station chief is looking at all of the data and trying to find the patterns. And there is a fair amount of data out there, and I am not going to go into the default position of believing at this point what the Biden administration or the Harris administration or the Obama administration is telling me. I am not going to go into that default position. My immediate reaction is, you're going to have to prove this stuff. And if you're saying things like, oh, well, we don't have recordings of the communications that morning between the security detail, then my immediate immediate reaction is, okay, you don't have them for a reason because you deliberately got rid of them. Now, maybe 20 years ago or 30 years ago, I would have a different opinion. But at this point, I am extremely skeptical.
And extreme skepticism, I think, is a legitimate and valid place to be, even though the left would, of course, call that being a conspiracy theorist. Well, fine, you know, label us all that you want. That
fine.
Doesn't really matter, right? Because any reasonable person would look at this and say, we're not getting all of the answers. And looking at what happened on Capitol Hill yesterday, certainly she didn't even have the answers and was not even willing to provide what little information she may have. And so this also comes, Scott Uhlinger, at a time when, you know, the last 10 days in this news cycle has been utterly crazy. And this is coming at a time where the American people don't even know where our current sitting president is, what his health condition is. There's speculation on social media, you know, even as of last night. I mean, as I was going to bed, I'm seeing people tweet things like, you know, is Biden even alive? I mean, we're at this point in our country where our leadership, whoever that is, and we don't even know who it is, frankly, is not giving the American people transparency. So what do you make of this? From your position and all of your experience with the CIA, what do you make of Joe Biden resigning from the campaign via a letter with an electronic signature posted on social media, and we haven't heard from him since?
Right. I mean, this is clearly, you know, again, you know, I was CIA working a lot of Russian and Iranian operations my whole life. And I'm old enough that I remember as a kid laughing at the Soviet Union when Chernenko and Andropov were the last, like some of the last general secretaries of the Soviet Union. And they died and their death was covered up or delayed. They delayed the release of, oh, he's in good health. He's pretty good. But there's no film of him. And I remember watching speculation, is the guy really alive? Well, now we're living the exact same thing, except it's an American president, and it's surrealistic, but it is not without precedent. So some people can poo-poo this idea, but it's a logical conclusion that there is something seriously wrong with him. And they decided that since he is basically incapacitated, this is the time to do this kind of coup and cut through the Jill Biden, Lady Macbeth act, who's trying to keep her position. And they basically decided to, okay, we're going to put this out. And that's why the staffers got 1 minute notice that he dropped out of his campaign and that the head of his campaign was on Meet the Press 3 hours before and everything was hunky-dory. So it's clear that this stuff is happening. And so the next thing is, yeah, is the guy dead? Is he near death? I think it's very possible he is near death, or he is extremely, at this point, he is incapacitated in the sense that he cannot get up out of bed or whatever. And you know, when are we going to find out more about this? Well, I guess we'll find more about it if he decides to, be released from his mortal coil or something. I don't know. But basically, every possibility is on the table with this administration.
And we have to keep that healthy skepticism, I think, of the narrative that those in power would like to feed us and be willing to ask those questions without fear. So, Scott Uhlinger, really appreciate your insights, your commentary. Look forward to having you back again soon as all of this continues to unfold. And we need to talk about the new Harris campaign and how she is moving forward, just barreling forward now in just the last 24 hours, raising $81 million. We'll talk more about that coming up next.
Jerusalem, oh Jerusalem, how many times I would have taken you under my wings. They had everything that was necessary for them to know Jesus and follow him, and they went their way.
I think for nations, for individuals, there is a day that you have to make the decision to respond to the Lord, and it might be that the door of opportunity after that shuts.
Exploring the Word, weekdays 3 p.m. Central on AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And breaking news, Speaker Mike Johnson has just released this statement. Quote, the security failures that allowed an assassination attempt on Donald Trump's life are shocking. In response, Representative Hakeem Jeffries and I are announcing a task force, a House task force made up of 7 Republicans and 6 Democrats to thoroughly investigate the matter. The task force will be empowered with subpoena authority and will move quickly to find facts, ensure accountability, and make certain such failures never happen again. So the speaker is definitely on this. I commend him for that. And it is interesting that this is a bipartisan committee. Good that there's at least one more Republican than Democrat to just kind of, you know, tip the majority in the Republicans' favor there, which I think is appropriate given that they have that majority. But it's interesting to see all of this unfolding so rapidly. I don't know about you, but I feel like I have whiplash from the news cycle. It is just one unprecedented thing after the next. And now Kamala Harris is just barreling on full speed ahead. As of late last night, she reportedly has secured enough delegates to be the presumptive Democrat nominee. I mean, this was just so quick. And there was no open convention. There wasn't even a question of another candidate, even though former President Barack Obama did not endorse her. He called for an open convention, but didn't really say it in those words. And yet, when you have Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, and the Clintons, who control a lot of the delegates in the donor base, when they're endorsing Vice President Kamala Harris, then that's really the direction that the Democrat Party is heading. So now this coming from a report on X from the Wall Street Journal, White House reporter Ken Thomas, Harris's campaign has requested vetting materials from potential VPs, including Cooper from North Carolina, Kelly from Arizona, Shapiro, governor in Pennsylvania, Whitmer, governor in Michigan, Walz, Minnesota, and Pritzker in Illinois, according to a person familiar. Bashar from Kentucky told CNN that he hasn't been asked to submit his info at this point. So those 6 are the potential vice presidential picks. So let's bring on our good friend Orrin McIntyre from The Blaze to talk about this. So Orrin, before we get into the weeds on kind of the VP stuff, you feel like you have whiplash too?
Yeah, it's been a pretty wild week here, Saturday to Sunday. Moments when, you know, just years when nothing happens, and then a few days where everything happens. And I guess this is unfortunately what you would expect when we have a system that is decrepit as the one that we have now. When, you know, you have all this control, you have all this censorship, you have all this repression that keeps people from noticing the obvious, but when the dam finally breaks, it all has to break at once, and they have to speed themselves from one issue to another. It's like the Roman emperors, you know, when they thought they were going to lose power, when ailing emperor would lose power, you had to have the Praetorian Guard rush up the replacement as soon as possible to avoid some kind of civil war breaking loose. So you had to make sure that everything was in place so that there would be this continuity, even if it wasn't official. At least people had the appearance of official procedure, and that's what kept things going.
Right. And this is history, in a sense, repeating itself. And this is, you know, exactly what that quotation suggests, and the whole, you know, history behind the sort of Marxist-Leninist theory of where, you know, there are decades that nothing happens, and then there are weeks when decades happen. And one of my favorite memes, and the memes are just great, at least, you know, thank goodness we're going through this news cycle in the era of the meme wars. But my favorite one so far is this the post of the giant billboard that's, of course, cartoonish, and it says 0 days since the last once in a lifetime historical event. And it feels like every day we're just getting all of these unprecedented historical events that are taking place just one after another. And that's exactly what you're referring to, Orrin. And so, you know, is this rapid succession just attempting to kind of overhaul any of the pushback and just shove all of the propaganda through the throats of the American people, so that we're sitting here, you know, 4 months out from an election going, wait, what is even going on? I don't even have time to get my bearings.
Yeah, I mean, the American people have been slowly coming to terms with this for a while, but now with the Biden administration's just complete destruction, its own implosion, it's really so obvious. Our government is fake. It's very clear that Joe Biden was not running the country when he had the debate. It was very clear that he does not have the cognitive capacity to do his job, so someone else is doing it for him. Now you have Kamala Harris, even though Joe Biden made it very clear that he had no intention of stepping down, that he didn't want to step down, that he was fighting with every fiber of his being to stay in the office well past his sell-by date. All of a sudden, we get a picture on his Twitter account, and that counts as some kind of official notice, apparently. We don't see the guy forever. And all of a sudden, this woman, who hasn't won a single primary, is now the candidate for one of the two major parties in the United States. The FEC, I don't know about you, but I don't hear a lot of government bureaucracies that suddenly wake up on Sunday afternoon to fast-track a process. But they managed to go ahead and switch everything over to her in like a few hours in relation to the campaign. It's very obvious that these dominoes were all set up to fall as quickly as possible to make sure that there are no questions about, is this legal? Is this anything approaching the sacred democracy that we're told everyone is fighting for?
Right. And speaking of legal questions, there was a memorandum late yesterday from the White House, because supposedly Joe Biden is still, you know, in office and still competent and capable to execute the offices of the president. But this is titled Memorandum on the Delegation of Certain Functions and Authorities Under the Rebuilding Economic Prosperity and Opportunity for Ukrainians Act. And it's really interesting because it's the delegation of certain functions and authorities under this act, basically to the Secretary of the Treasury. And it's really interesting that this delegation to the Secretary of the Treasury is now supposedly from the president. And I don't know the legal grounds of this and whether this violates the non-delegation clause or whether this is, because it's within the specific, it's within the executive branch, if that delegation doesn't necessarily violate that clause, which is usually that you can't delegate to one of the coordinate branches. So it's not like he's delegating it to Congress. But at the same time, you know, this type, and I don't know if you've seen this, Oren, and it's at, you know, whitehouse.gov, so everybody can go and look at this. But this to me just seems like yet another weird, questionable piece to the puzzle of saying, okay, why is he delegating his presidential authority now, specifically the functions and the authorities related to Ukraine, at this moment in time? I mean, it's all really weird.
So we actually have a long precedent of this type of thing in constitutional governance of republics. This is called a commissarial dictatorship. This is what you use when you used to take a particular issue and you would assign it to a commissar and they would go ahead and handle this. This is something that is a function of other governments, but it's not something that's ever been in the United States. This is not something that we see on a regular basis. We assume that the executive is making a decision on those issues, even though he's getting the input of other advisors. This maneuver makes it clear that he's trying to go ahead and enshrine that ability into other people, because he probably, or whoever is running things, doesn't think that he'll be able to do so later. And one of the things that they need to make sure that keeps happening is money flowing through Ukraine. So you want to make sure that you shore up that authority just in case the guy who otherwise pretends to be making those decisions isn't around or is incapable of signing a piece of paper or handing out a mandate. So, you know, does this mean that there's a larger, intention to go ahead and assign more of these duties? I don't know. But, you know, we've seen this kind of thing before. It's just very un-American.
Yeah. And it raises a lot of questions. And, you know, one of the other great memes was this is obviously fake because it's a meme, but it was a screenshot of like Joe Biden's phone that has 52 missed calls from President Zelensky and then a text message saying, my money's still coming, right? I'm scared. Please answer. And it's really funny, you know, going around saying like, hey, Biden, you know, I'm still out here, President Zelensky over in Ukraine. But, you know, but it drives home the point that all of these things are continuing to happen how the Democrats prefer. And they're just out in public doing all of these things and not answering any of the questions. And if we ask any of these questions, then we're just these conspiracy theorists that have no right to ask them. And yet here we are, and we need to continue to ask those questions and push for answers. And so, you know, with this barreling down the pike of the Kamala Harris presumptive nomination. I mean, this is just wild because she earned zero delegates. I think it was less than 1% of the vote when she ran in 2019. And now all of a sudden, within the span of basically 24 hours, now suddenly she's secured enough delegates to be the presumptive nominee. She's vetting the VP candidates. Where does this put her, if she is ultimately the nominee, where does this put her vice president selection? Because this came after Trump, who waited literally till the day that he had to make a decision to pick his vice president. Where does this set the matchup?
Well, obviously, you're looking to go ahead and shore up some level of constituency with this VP pick. She could pick somebody who had a level of gravitas normally with somebody in her position who hasn't necessarily had the most stellar track record as a vice president. You might someone who has very serious policy experience, but the Democratic bench has been cleared out pretty heavily. There's a reason why someone like Kamala Harris was even available for the vice presidential pick anyway. She could, of course, go with someone like Gretchen Whitmer, double down on kind of the diversity, equity, and inclusion aspect of the ticket, though that feels kind of unnecessary since she already checks those boxes. But Whitmer is well-liked inside the party, brings a lot of experience and a state with her. But it seems like Shapiro could also be a good call. Obviously, Kamala Harris being somewhat pro-Palestinian puts her at odds with a very important constituency inside the Democratic Party. And so showing that she is somebody who is still open to making sure to make envoys to the Jewish community probably won't hurt her in that moment, but I don't know if that factors in heavily enough on her VP pick.
Yeah, and so what do you make of Josh Shapiro, who is a new governor as of 2022 in Pennsylvania? He was the former AG, and he is Jewish, like Kamala Harris's husband. So that's an interesting aspect with the ongoing Israeli-Middle East conflict. And, some of the takes today, I'm looking at Comfortably Smug, which is, for those who are listening, that's one of the accounts that's really snarky that you should totally follow on X if you want to. But it's like some of these takes from that he just posted one on from USA Today is saying the downside. Shapiro has led Pennsylvania as governor for only 2 years. It's coming from USA Today and is relatively inexperienced compared to several of the other VP contenders. And this is just wild. He's also unlikely to excite the party's progressive base given his position on the Israel-Hamas war. Shapiro, who is Jewish, has yet to call for a ceasefire. So, this is obviously pushing an agenda. I mean, is that potentially going to factor in to her VP selection?
I think it's possible. Look, the reality is that the Jewish community votes over 70% Democrat on a regular basis, despite the fact that Democrats have been very abusive to their cause. And so it's interesting that, unfortunately, it seems like there might be the second most monolithic vote for the left outside of the African-American community. You would hope that current events would shift that there would be an obvious, at least just self-interest understanding of what's going on, but that doesn't necessarily seem to be the case. So it seems like the left can continue to push on this issue to be pro-Palestine in that conflict and not really pay a political cost. And as long as that's the case, why should you even go to bat? And why should you even make certain supplications like putting someone like Shapiro on the ticket? If that's the momentum of your party and you're not going to get punished for it, then there's no reason to make any changes. So maybe, hopefully, mismanagement of that would shift the way that the Jewish community votes in this election. But if they don't make a change, then, why would the Democrats bend the knee? Why would they go ahead and make any kind of concession to put somebody with their interests in a vice presidential slot?
Yeah. And I just got this text from a friend who will remain nameless. But I think that this is a right analysis when we're talking about, the Democrats and how they're just pushing for a victory regardless. And my friend says this, the craziest part is I don't think any Democrat voter really cares that all of this was kept hidden from them. I don't think they even feel disenfranchised by the swap. They're so focused on beating Trump that the Democrats could literally do whatever they want as long as they beat Trump and their voting base will be happy. And I think that's true, because even in, you know, this entire discussion, I don't know that the Democrats even care who the VP nominee necessarily is, as long as they can go out and basically try to, you know, DeSantis J.D. Vance. I mean, we saw yesterday after his first speech that the entire coalition of the left is trying to call him, you know, this this weak, deeply unpopular, uncharismatic figure, which they're just trying to stir up Trump's ire with that. But the whole point of this is the Democrats, as long as they stay in power, they don't actually care what happens and whether this comports with their own rules in the DNC, whether this comports with the law and the Constitution overall. And that is very scary. And so, Orrin McIntyre, we're already out of time, but I always really appreciate your insights and analysis. You can also follow Orrin McIntyre on X, on social media. And if you dare to go into that forum, It's the wild, wild west out there, but lots of great memes. So we'll be back tomorrow wondering what other unprecedented event will take place between now and then. But the bottom line, my friends, is be praying for this nation, because we are in a literal clash between good and evil. And we as Christians need to be praying for the future of this country on a very serious note. So you can always reach me and my team, Jenna at AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.